South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg prepares to stand trial. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Thursday, August 25th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, our rotating team of Dakota political junkies joins us for analysis of the trial of the Attorney General as Roundsburg mounts a vibrant defense for three fairly low-level traffic violations. It's clear much is at stake in the trial. John Hunter and Mike Card are with us. We check in with school superintendents across the state about back to school in South Dakota. Today we visit with the Chamberlain community. Plus, Moment in Sound with Matt Faulkner ahead of the Montrose Music Festival. That's later in the hour. We're broadcasting live today from the SDPB Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first.
With South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Laura Johnson. South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg goes on trial tomorrow in Sixth Circuit Court. The two-day trial takes place at the Stanley County Courthouse in Fort Pierre. The Attorney General faces Class 2 misdemeanors for his role in the death of 55-year-old Joseph Beaver on September 12th last year. Roundsburg was driving to his home in Pierre after attending a Republican fundraiser in Redfield earlier in the night. His car struck Beaver, who was walking on the shoulder of Highway 14 in Hyde County. Roundsburg called 911 and reported hitting a deer, and Hyde County Sheriff Mike Volt responded to the scene. He and Roundsburg searched the area, but they didn't find Beaver's body in the ditch until the following day. Roundsburg was charged with using an electronic device while driving, illegal lane change, and careless driving. Each charge carries a maximum sentence of 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. Tourism is South Dakota's second largest industry, bringing in billions of dollars. But Native American-operated tourism is underdeveloped. SDPB's Ariel Zions has more.
The Native American in the South Dakota Native American Tourism Alliance doesn't just mean tourism about Indigenous people. It means tribes and tribal members participating and profiting from the industry. The group has a plan to support Native Americans interested in the tourism industry and to improve marketing for attractions that already exist. Do Bad Warrior Ganji is a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and vice president of the Black Hills Powwow.
I think the South Dakota Native Tourism Alliance is a potential revenue source for our tribes, and it's a way for our tribes to generate income, alleviate poverty, and help us to conserve our natural resources and culture.
The Tourism Alliance is identifying experiences along existing scenic routes. This is meant to usher tourists through different tribal lands while encouraging collaboration and skill sharing among the tribes. Gus Yellowhair and his daughter Tiana are Northern Cheyenne and Oglala Lakota. They own Tatanka Res Tours, which has been giving tours of the Pine Ridge Reservation and Black Hills for 7 years.
The economic situation on the reservation is like almost 60 to 70% unemployment. And so we have big dreams and big ideas of being able to help the tribe with that portion of it by training young people in areas of tourism, in areas of art, possibly working, you know, with the state or with the government on, you know, opening up a facility on federal land. You know, we're going to approach them with that. And I think it's only fair that we get a piece of the pie.
The Tourism Alliance will share its 5-year plan and new website during a Thursday launch party in Rapid City. I'm SDPB's Ariel Zients.
Governor Kristi Noem says draft proposals by Republican state lawmakers to ban vaccine mandates are not conservative. Representatives John Hansen and Scott Odenbach have each announced proposals to prohibit COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Noem does not support vaccine mandates, but she says it's not the role of government to ban them in private businesses.
It is not conservative to grow government and to tell businesses what to do and how to treat their employees. Most of the Republican legislators in South Dakota, they get that. But there are a vocal few.
The Republican Speaker of the House, Spencer Gosch, supports calling a special session to consider the vaccine mandate ban. For SDPB, I'm Laura Johnson.
And I'm Lori Walsh. July was a record-breaking month for the Rapid City Regional Airport. Patrick Dame is the airport's executive director, and he's joining us today with an update. Welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Tell us some of the numbers that you have been seeing on enplanements in Rapid City Regional Airport.
So this past month, in the month of July, we ended up breaking 50,800 passengers, actually breaking 50,000 for the first time ever for any one month here at the airport. So it's been a great summer.
Any idea of what's driving those numbers? What do you know and what do you not know about the increase?
Well, as we look at, you know, going through the tourism market that we've got here in western South Dakota is fantastic, and it's one of the things that we've really pushed with the airlines over the years. And, you know, as we had an issue in 2020 with COVID, you know, obviously we had a drop in passengers through that, but we did see a resurgence of passengers who were trying to get to wide open spaces late summer last year. And, you know, this year as we look into people getting back to traveling and getting back to wanting to get to the great outdoors, feeling safe outdoors, it's really been great for communities that are tourism-based like Rapid City here. And, you know, we've seen a very good benefit from that.
So we were seeing from this year's Sturgis Motorcycle Rally a drop in international visitors, but an increase in domestic travel. Are you seeing any similar trends?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing the trend of people doing more travel within the country here and, you know, definitely getting out to the places where they feel comfortable. And, you know, anytime they can go, you know, hike in our great parks that we have here, I think that's something that folks feel comfortable with.
Tell me a little bit about some of the summer routes and the impact of those routes, and then do they change as we move into the shoulder months or the fall winter?
Yeah, we had a number of routes coming in nonstop from a number of different communities. We were running upwards of 24 different routes. And, you know, a lot of those are seasonal routes, and as we move into the fall, those routes will start to drop off, and we'll drop back to our core six routes that we have for the winter months. But, yeah, we definitely do see, you know, our market is very hyper-seasonal, and, you know, as we roll into the summer every year, we do see more nonstop flights coming in from mostly from eastern cities, major cities. And the one thing that we find is that, you know, having a connection to population of you know, more than a million people, we can really help make a route successful for the airport coming into here and being able to work with those folks who want to get out to a destination like ours.
All right. Are there infrastructure challenges to that, opportunities as we look at, you know, President Biden's infrastructure bill? Or I guess my big question is, how does this get built out in the future to increase the service even more?
Well, we continue to grow, and we're definitely continuing work on developing our infrastructure here. We are looking at things like terminal expansions. And those things have been in the planning basically for the last about 5 years that we've been working towards trying to make sure that we can accommodate the needs of the airport and the needs of western South Dakota and our ability to meet that. So we do continuously work through that. And, you know, we also are working with the airlines, again, to promote our destination and promote new routes. And we'll continue to do that going forward.
We can't talk about increase in travel right now without talking about COVID. What are some of the airlines' restrictions? How are people flying in, and what are they finding when they're flying out of the Rapid City Regional Airport they need to be prepared for?
So everybody that comes into the facility is required to wear a mask. They're also required to wear a mask while on the airplane itself. So, you know, as you're coming out here, please plan on having a mask with you and wearing a mask while you're in the terminal and while you're in the airplane. And, you know, we continue to work with folks on that. And, You know, all we really ask is that everybody understand the issue and not necessarily provide any pushback against that, and just be cooperative when you're planning on traveling to be wearing a mask.
Stay home when you're sick. I think we could probably say that a little more often than we have been lately. It's hard when you want to, you know, catch a flight, but a flight with a COVID passenger is not a good plan. So definitely get tested and stay home with your sick, if you're sick, right?
I would agree with that. Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
Patrick Dame is the airport's executive director for the Rapid City Regional Airport. Thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Up next, back to school in South Dakota, we check in with the superintendent of the Chamberlain School District. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Business and Community Development reporting on SDPB is supported by SDN Communications. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
When one family fled Afghanistan during the Soviet War, they settled in the U.S.
When I remember those days, I think to myself, we have to be here for our Afghan community that's coming, because they've gone through a lot.
Now, decades later, they are helping a community prepare to welcome a new generation of Afghan refugees. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding is provided by Sanford Underground Research Facility, supporting South Dakota teachers and students with classroom resources, field trips, and professional development. Learn more at sanfordlab.org.
Walk out the door and your world changes. Dark to light, quiet to noise. The stars, the sounds of insects and birds, kids playing, waves crashing, cars passing. Even in our most peaceful moments, the world is always moving, changing. Something big is happening somewhere. Take NPR with you and stay connected to the world outside your door. Listen live on your phone, at this station's website, or npr.org.
Listen at sdpb.org or download our app.
Healthcare is not only a matter of personal care, but also a major public policy issue. SDPB covers all angles of public health practices and procedures, from illness to recovery. The healthcare beat on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, welcome back to school in South Dakota. Students are returning to classrooms across the state. Justin Zeitz is the superintendent of the Chamberlain School District, and he's joining us today with plans that he and his staff have made for getting kids back into the classroom as safely as possible. Superintendent, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori.
So fall 2021, still not back to normal, but we know a whole lot more than we did at fall of 2022. Tell me a little bit about some of the knowledge that we've gained over the past 18 months or so is feeding into back-to-school plans now.
Right. We learned a lot in the last 18 months. And what we did this summer is we kind of sat down and said, what can we do to keep kids in school? Obviously, our biggest concern. Last year, both buildings were out for about a week in the fall when we really hit the beginning of that surge. And so we're working to avoid that this fall and really starting to see that across the state right now. So we have a different e-learning plan here. As far as our high school goes, we found an online provider for it if students want to go that route. We have technology in the classrooms this year. They're called swivel cameras that allow students to pop right in and jump class to class real time, so they're not missing anything if they are quarantined or isolated. And then we tried to figure out what can we do on the back end of our school to help avoid spread, community spread within the school. And so we worked with our HVAC provider, installed MERV 13 filters everywhere, which I learned you have to be very careful when you do, because those can actually do the opposite if you don't change them soon enough, and they get full, and the air just goes around them, and then there's no filtration at all. And then we have our systems are running 24 hours a day, so we're exchanging outside air at about 20 to 25% constantly. So we're having fresh air pulled in and really just trying to educate parents again as they come back, stay home if you're sick, monitor for symptoms, and, you know, just letting them know ahead of time we're being proactive this year. And we may have some policies in place that unfortunately are going to be controversial, like masking.
Yeah.
So basically just trying to do everything on the front end this year so we aren't reacting to the situation.
What is the masking policy right now?
Right. So right now we're in a tiered policy that if we move to tier two, then masking is expected. If we move to tier three, then masking is required K-12. And the school board will move the tiers based off of input from myself and then Sanford here in town.
So transparency is super important, which is why I'm glad that you're joining here with us today. But also parents and staff members, they want to know, and they want to know as much information as they possibly can in order to make informed decisions. But also it's a community, and so sometimes you want to know things that maybe you don't even need to know because that's how families work, right?
Right?
Tell me a little bit about how you're going to communicate with parents and staff members about illnesses and people who are out and possible exposures. What's the plan for that?
Yeah, so obviously we can't tell you X student is out. We can't give names. What we're doing is we're working with the Department of Health to determine close contacts, and then through them, those phone calls will be made. So we send the Department of Health workbooks for close contact tracing, which that's another thing we streamlined here this spring. The workbook is essentially an Excel worksheet that we fill out all this information. And it was tedious, to say the least, for somebody to fill in, say we have 10 close contacts to fill in name, address, everything on them. So I worked last spring and wrote a computer script to do that automatically, which has been phenomenal for staff. It saves tons of time. But really, what we're doing is sending that to Department of Health. They then call the families that are close contact and walk through the procedures, policies that are recommended by them. And then if they have questions, they call back to our school nurse, who's our point of contact for our policies, and she answers their questions. Every Friday, we send out an update that says, okay, we have X number of close contacts and X number of positive cases in the school district. Please be advised if one of these is at your building. That way parents know, okay, I've got an elementary kid and there's a positive there. Perhaps we should send our student with a mask, or perhaps we should ask them, you know, hey, you make sure to wash hands, you making sure to, wash hands, I guess, would be the big one.
Yeah. We mentioned, you know, controversy, and I was the kind of parent, superintendent, that would know all this. Everything, every message you would have sent out, I would have read and memorized by the time I brought my kid to school. And then, of course, there's always a parent next to you that is like, I have no idea what's happening. Like, I didn't have any time to look at any of this. So let's talk about that communication factor and the controversy. Like, what do you want parents and staff and even students to know about how we're going to treat each other in this space as we do this next hard thing?
Well, hopefully everybody is going into it with the same mentality of we want to do what's best for our kids and we want to keep those kids in school and in activities. I don't think anybody in education has a different view, and hopefully none of the parents have a different view. You know, we make our decisions based off the best information we have at that time, and then we learn from that and make better decisions in the future. Hopefully all of the parents, last year, the Chamberlain community was extremely supportive of the decisions we made, and some of them were very difficult decisions, and I'm hoping that they carry forward. You know, we're going into almost 2 years of this now.
Yeah.
I just hope that parents and community can carry that kindness forward and say, okay, yep, we understand. We want to keep kids in school. This is what we need to do. I'm working with the school board to set, here's our zero line. You know, once we cross that threshold, then we're going to do this. So it's not as ambiguous as last year.
Yeah.
I think that's where people got frustrated last year, is the ambiguity of the situation. We don't know week to week what's going to change.
All right, one more thing, and that's never underestimate the power of a teacher, because many of these students across the state of South Dakota are going to come back you know, new kindergartners are coming in, wide variety of learning gaps and things that they did at home or weren't able to do at home. Say something about your staff and their ability to be ready for getting kids where they need to be on regarding learning.
Yeah, that's the great thing about an educator is you walk into an elementary classroom where really you see those achievement gaps and they're not insurmountable. You can catch that student up to where they need to be at grade level, and they have worked their tails off to develop stations. We've restructured our title program completely to become interventionalists to start working with the kids that we have identified as falling behind grade level. Our entire elementary schedule changed because of COVID. We now have dedicated 90 uninterrupted blocks of time for math every day, 90 uninterrupted blocks of time for English and reading every day, so that we can use our tools, the teachers, the software, and say, okay, here's the exact thing that this student needs to make that jump to the next level. The great thing about technology now is we can issue a student an assessment, and it'll tell us, okay, Johnny is missing these three standards, and then it'll suggest some interventions for that student. Then our interventionists can pull them, work with them, get them up to grade level. And even for our high-flying kids, it'll identify here's what they need to move to the next level. So really we're personalized learning on a mass scale at our grade levels because of COVID. It's actually a wonderful thing to see happen.
Yeah. Justin Zeitz, a 90-minute block for reading. I know it doesn't always work out in reality quite like it does in my imagination, but that sounds like a thing that I want right now. Can we all just, everybody in South Dakota, take a 90-minute block for reading, please, today? It'll do you good. Justin Zeitz is superintendent of the Chamberlain School District. Welcome to Back to School. Thanks for being here.
No, thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Ahead on the program, the Dakota Political Junkies join us to discuss the upcoming trial of South Dakota's Attorney General. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
All right, bear with me on this one, would you? But American manufacturing of wind energy capacity kind of blows hot and cold.
Cyclicality is something that has been extremely challenging for the industry, especially for a manufacturer.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Which way wind energy is blowing? Next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6:30 Central, 5:30 Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda in Rapid City. Inviting you to experience the peace of mind and more that come with driving a certified vehicle from Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda. See you at Denny Menholt, Rushmore Honda, Rapid City.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR, here to thank sustaining members of this station. Public Radio is here for you every day, no matter what. And when you give automatically every month, you continually show that you're here for us and for this community. Thank you so much for your support.
Monthly sustaining supporters form a strong foundation for SDPB. Sustaining donations are ones SDPB can count on to fund programs you love. Thank you.
The exploration of cutting-edge products and services being offered in South Dakota is highlighted on our Science and Technology Beat, supported on SDPB by Black Hills Information Security. Politics and Public Policy Reporting is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Attorney General Jason Roundsburg will avoid a trial and take a plea deal for misdemeanor traffic charges in a crash last year in which he hit and killed a man who was walking along a rural highway. That man was Joe Beaver. We're hearing now from Beadle County State Attorney Michael Moore, one of the prosecutors, that there will be a plea deal. There will not be a trial. We have no more details other than that right now. It's time for our weekly roundtable of the Dakota Political Junkies. This is a rotating panel, and today we have Mike Card and John Hunter with us. Mike Card is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota, and he's with us today from SDPB's Vermilion Studio. Dr. Card, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me. And I have a rectangular table in front of me.
And John Hunter is a publisher emeritus of the Madison Daily Leader, and he's joining us by the phone. John, explain to me your table now.
Rectangular. It's wooden. I have a padded chair that I'm sitting in and comfortable and ready to talk.
He's got a padded chair, Mike. That's what happens when you're publisher emeritus.
My studio chair is pretty comfortable.
Okay, good. Well, we're just getting news that the trial and the consequences of the trial we were all set to talk about is no longer proceeding like we expected, and now there will be a plea deal. John Hunter, let's start with you. This probably isn't a huge surprise to have a plea deal at the last moment in any criminal trial, but everybody in South Dakota is watching it because why? State the obvious for us.
Well, it's the strangest thing where you have what most South Dakotans are anticipating, which is kind of a manslaughter trial, but the charges are actually misdemeanor traffic violations. And so most of us don't really get that, right? So, and you accurately told her, prepared the story saying that this auto accident occurred and Joseph Beaver died as a result of that accident and how they're working this out. But the three misdemeanor traffic charges are something you'd normally say, yep, I'll do it, I'll pay the fine and so forth. But again, kind of bigger consequences for a public official, a publicly elected official. And so we don't know what the plea deal is yet, and which seems strange too, because the charges, what do you plead down to when you already have relatively minor charges?
Right. Now, there's a whole lot of context in here that people were expecting to hear, including Mike Card, this rigorous defense that Jason Roundsburg was mounting, where he wanted access to the mental health records of Joe Beaver that was being disputed by his family. And we were expecting him to argue that Mr. Beaver essentially threw himself in front of a vehicle, which seemed to strain credibility for some people. But that's not going to play out in the court anymore. Where do you want to begin as far as what is the most significant of all these details to you right now?
Well, if we start with the accident, it's I think we really have to go back to the North Dakota Highway Patrol's interrogation of the Attorney General, where they pointed out, how could you not have known? His glasses were in the front seat beside you. His flashlight was still lit the next day. How could you not have seen this if you were really looking? And I think that even though the charges weren't directly, I don't know how to say this, weren't as a direct result of Beaver's death, the activities that apparently the Attorney General pled something to did result in Joe Beaver's death. And I think that's what most of the people will remember. And I think most of us, after having watched that video of the interrogation, couldn't imagine what sort of defense could be mounted against those details that were presented to Attorney General Ravensburg by the investigators.
John Hunter, from a newspaper, you've spent a career covering these stories and choosing the headlines for what was going to be in your local Madison Daily Leader. I'm with Mike on this, and that I think everyone will remember the glasses were in his car. Everyone will remember that if you forget everything else, you'll remember that Joe Beaver's glasses were inside the Attorney General's vehicle and those investigators asking him, if he left any glasses behind, and the Attorney General sort of fumbling with this, well, I have some, maybe they're sunglasses, maybe they're, it was a difficult moment to watch. And I think a lot of people will remember that. Are there other parts of that interrogation or this whole process, John, that you think people that will just really remain in people's memories even years later?
I think the whatever it was, 12 or
14 hours between the accident when the Attorney General called 911, and I believe it was the sheriff who came out, and they walked around the scene and didn't see anything. So this is not just the Attorney General who said nothing happened, and then going back the next day when the sun is out to find the victim. That's, to me, strange that two people at midnight or whatever the time was, not being able to find anything, and then the next day finding what happened. So to me, that's, again, if it was, I'm not implying it was a hit and run, but if it was, you know, where you ran from the scene and went back later, you know, that would be. And also, I think in many accidents like this, of course, they didn't know it was a human fatality at the time. They would have done an alcohol test right away, which they didn't do, I think, until maybe the next morning either, which then is probably makes the test moot because, you know, alcohol didn't work through your system. So there are still those things that I think South Dakotans would like to know. And, you know, there's of course, a civil case coming up.
Right.
Maybe those things come out then.
So I want to back up a little bit for folks who maybe have, you know, don't have memory of this or are tuning in for the first time and wondering a few of the things that we're talking about. So Jason Roundsburg called 911 the night of the September accident. It's dark. He reports hitting what he thinks. I don't know what I hit. And then maybe it was a deer. Hyde County Sheriff responds to the scene. They search the area. They say they don't see anything. And they come back the following day. And that is when they discover Joe Beaver's body with, as Mike said, the flashlight that he was carrying along the highway still on. Extensive investigation by out-of-state law enforcement officers, because the Attorney General is the state's top law enforcement officer, and Roundsburg's eventually charged with using an electronic device while driving, illegal lane change, and careless driving. So each one of those charges carries a maximum sentence of 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. Now, we don't know what the plea deal is at this point. He was scheduled to go to trial tomorrow, and now we've received word that that will not happen. There will be a plea deal, and we are awaiting further notice on that. Mike Card, there were many calls for his resignation. And he stayed put. He did not resign. We haven't had him on the show since that happened, whereas typically we would be talking to a South Dakota Attorney General here and there. Let's talk about the politics of this and how it sort of impacts his ability to do his job, run for reelection, things like that in the future. Some of it we don't know. What do we know so far, Mike?
Well, I think what we know so far is that former Attorney General, who's Marty Jackley, who served for 10 years as Attorney General of the state of South Dakota, has announced his candidacy for Attorney General in the 2022 election. To achieve that, it's constitutional officers are nominated by the state party convention, at least in the Republican Party. There's no primary. Attorney General Ravensburg has continued to go around to Lincoln Day dinners and the like. So there will be a contest, I suspect, in the convention. Whether people hold this against him, you know, I guess in a sense, if these are traffic offenses to which one pled something that mm-hmm. leads in no trial, or people focus on whether the prosecutorial discretion was a deal that he got special treatment and got off, and so we're not going to vote for him. And I think those are political culture aspects that we don't know how they play out. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there was a move to impeach Attorney General Ravensburg, but there simply wasn't time with the rest of the session. It would have delayed the implementation of laws had they gone forward with this impeachment. So we're waiting until the results of this particular court case. We'll find out to some extent what they are, and if the legislature decides to impeach Mr. Ravensburg or not.
John Hunter, when Marty Jankley ran for governor against Kristi Noem, he had that ad with how many, you know, county sheriffs throughout the state were supporting his candidacy. After Ravensburg was, after more of this story and the interrogation was released, the state FOP and some of the sheriff's organizations, you know, sort of publicly withdrew their support, and then things were quiet for a while. My question to you, John Hunter, as we get ready to say farewell to our time here, how important is essentially the police, the cop, the law enforcement vote in supporting an attorney general? Does it matter as far as political support?
I think it matters in its size. I mean, there was, and I don't know the current numbers, but there was a time at which former Attorney General Jackley announced that 63 out of 66 county sheriffs, or whatever, it was an overwhelming amount. It wasn't like just more than half. It was really, and I think by most measures, he did a great job when he was in office. We don't know. This is a first term for the current Attorney General, so. We don't know, really. We haven't seen as many high-profile cases or legislative appearances and so forth. So it's almost going back to where Marty Jackley is the incumbent. That sounds strange, but he was in there much longer and is well-known. Probably his name recognition is probably still greater than Ravensburg. So I just think the overwhelming number, Lori, is what makes it not necessarily the fact that the FOP or the sheriffs are endorsing him.
We're going to leave
it. Can I give you 15 seconds?
Yes, go.
I think the constitutional officers are what political scientists would call low information elections. We know very little generally about what they do. We know very little about the candidates in general, and so the electorate focuses on what information is available, and what information is available is what you were just talking about, that an overwhelming majority of the sheriffs have endorsed Marty Jackley, and that Ravensburg was found responsible for a traffic accident that resulted in the death of a man.
Right, and how he behaved afterwards is something people will not forget, either for good or for ill. Professor Mike Card, thanks for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for inviting me.
John Hunter with the Madison Daily Leader, thanks as well.
Thanks, Lori.
Let's take a moment now to honor inductees into the South Dakota Hall of Fame. Mamie Shields Pyle was influential in South Dakota's journey to suffrage. Patricia Miller is the Her Vote, Her Voice department chair. She joined us in 2020 on In the Moment to talk about Pyle and her legacy. The enshrinement ceremony for the 2020 class of inductees is scheduled for September 10th and 11th.
Mamie, along with many of the other women who were involved in the suffrage movement, traveled thousands of miles to bring their voice to Congress, to the legislature. Many of these women were considered criminals and were actually incarcerated. They were jailed for, not just overnight or weeks, but months. She lost her husband at an early age of 36. So it's amazing what she accomplished in raising these four young children, and in 1910 became very much involved in the suffrage movement and, you know, made great changes and inroads into how things were accomplished across South Dakota. She felt it was important that individuals who lived in the communities were a part of the suffrage effort. She was able to do petition drives in the counties. And I think by 1918, 95% of the women in South Dakota had signed a petition indicating they were willing to be a responsible voter. When you look at the obstacles and what they went through, it's remarkable that they continued to be persistent in but they believed in this. They truly believed that this was the right thing to do. And if we can move forward, remembering what these women went through and what they were able to accomplish, and with the vehicles that we have today, we should be able to live and work together to accomplish great things within our state and our nation.
Ahead on In the Moment, a very special moment in sound ahead of the Montrose Music Festival. Matt Faulkner is with us. You're in the moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. A year and a half of remote work has helped many Americans think differently about work-life balance.
Because at the end of your life, your manager, your coworkers, they're not going to be by your bedside. It's those people you left at home that you put second to your job.
Working from home for the long haul. That's next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by Mitco Business. We're in the business of helping partners go up and to the right. Head in the right direction with customized business internet, phone, and TV solutions to stay in touch and in control. More at midco.com/business.
On the next Fresh Air, addiction specialist Dr. Anna Lemke. She says we live in a time of unprecedented access to high-reward, high-dopamine stimuli. Drugs, food, news, gambling, shopping, texting, and tweeting, making us vulnerable to overconsumption and addiction. Her new book is Dopamine Nation. Join us.
This afternoon at 2, 1 Mountain, on SDPB.
Program funding by Arts South Dakota, encouraging the development of artistic talent and appreciation in all South Dakotans. Advancing the arts through education, service, and advocacy. More at artssouthdakota.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, beginning Friday, musicians from all over will gather in the community of Montrose, South Dakota, play music on the banks of the Vermilion River. It's a 100% acoustic festival, and it is the vision of Montrose native musician and songwriter Matt Faulkner. He's with us now in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio to talk and play a little music ahead of this 3D event. Matt, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm just going to let everybody know right now, you're just one of my favorites. Favorite moment in sound, and I love the work that you're doing as a musician, but you also focus really almost more on supporting other musicians, lifting people up, and creating that community. Tell me a little bit about that part of who you are as a singer-songwriter.
Well, I've kind of been boiling all this down because I've been traveling for 30 years and playing and going to festivals, and I knew that I wanted to promote music, but I just plugged into everything I could to learn, but also to build relationships, to have a community. And I tend to think community is bigger than the towns we live in or the states we live in a lot of times, and these telephones that we're on all the time kind of teach us how to compartmentalize. And a lot of times we're not even participating in our day. So paying attention to all these little details of what the root of community is. I guess I grew up around here, being 50 years old now. Phillips Avenue is a ghost town most of my life.
Yeah, me
and
too.
It's just flourishing now, and the music and arts are going off, and our music scene with the White Wall Sessions especially kind of pushing the beginning of getting that rolling, and then with the Levitt coming in and all the downtown businesses just kind of opening up the opportunity for acoustic songwriters to play out on the street, even where we kind of used to get in trouble just trying to busk down there, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so all that's, whether it's festivals or church or hospital or businesses, there seems to be this constant similar disconnect. Whether it's the root of it being community. So I guess seeing Sioux Falls flourish in the ways that it is, I think about where I'm from and every little community outside of Sioux Falls. While Sioux Falls is going off, all these little towns are falling apart. And none of us got enough oomph, no matter what kind of fundraiser we do, to do anything. And we're losing our swimming pools and our grocery stores and can't pay for our streets. And I guess as I boil these roots down, I see more sports tend to create a real positive direction, and they also kind of fuel a negative direction with rivaling towns. And we grew up with this idea of these sports that winning and losing being more important than your community or the sport itself and having fun. So I guess I'm trying to use this festival to try to just represent a little different version of community. Not that it hasn't always existed, but we need to start thinking about community being Sioux Falls and the surrounding communities. And you know, just supporting each other. And the part of community I see kind of muddling up, used to stop and help a neighbor out, and you could leave, and not a lot of words were said. It was just, there was this common understanding that we help each other. And now when you stop, there's all these apologies, and it's muddied up with trying to get money in your pocket. And none of that verbal stuff was ever really mentioned. We just helped each other out and went on with our day. It wasn't even a big deal. Or now you can't even help your neighbors very often without there being some kind of a payment or an apology.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so,
I mean, even when you came in to talk about this festival with us, with our team, you know, you just sat down and, you know, let's look each other in the eye and talk about this. And nobody does that. You know, we just get a press release or we get what have you. But you just said, let's talk about this. And we sat down and talked. And it was the highlight of my week. Just, it reminded me why we are in public broadcasting. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. You get caught up in all these things and the deadlines and the rush. We're going to talk more about the festival and how people can connect with it, but I'm hoping you'll play for us because you've got your guitar. What do you want to play for us?
I played this last time I was here, and I haven't been playing for a while because I've been plugged into helping some neighboring festivals and trying to put this one together myself. You'll have to bear with me a little bit, but I'm going to do this one again because in the process of trying to build this, I wrote this, the music part of it, 6-7 years ago in Billings, Montana. And as I've been boiling this stuff down, the words come along, and I'm not sure where they come from or that they're necessarily aimed right at what I'm doing, but it just fits for what we're here for. So it's called The Struggle. Time, there is a place, and there were angels in Montgomery. There's a way to tell a story and make it stick. It ain't no trick, it ain't no shtick. It's in the ways we live, and in these ways we pay attention. Without the struggle, I would know nothing at all. I stumble and I fall right through everything, and I can do just about anything wrong, and I'm more power when the hour is gone. just down the street, just down the road, where there are no more running motors. There ain't no clock, there ain't no wall, ain't no toilet, there ain't no stall. It's just all the other all to teach us how to pay attention. Without the struggle, they would know nothing at all. And I stumble and I fall right through everything. And I can do just about anything wrong. And I know that I must pay for everything. There's way more power when the hour is gone. So little humanity, so much insecurity. Everybody's in such a hurry. Too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry. No time for anything up in the sky. It's just you, yourself, and I to teach us how to pay attention. Without the struggle, we would know nothing at all. Well, I stumble and I fall right through everything. And I can do just about anything wrong. And I know that I must pay for everything. There's way more power when the hour's gone.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment, a little moment in sound with Matt Faulkner. Boy, I needed that. I know you didn't do it for me personally, but I needed that. I think our listeners needed that too. And this festival is going to be one of those experiences that people don't get very often in their life. Tell me a little bit about setting up camp and people coming around and playing. There's also, you know, you've got a pretty big you got a big name coming to town, but then you also have all these little just experiences where you're going to sit down at somebody's campfire and play. Like, how is the festival set up?
I set it up for this time thing. If I want to have a cup of coffee with a friend, it's 8-10 phone calls at the least, even to find them, let alone sit down and have a face-to-face. And building this thing face-to-face, you got to knock on people's doors 100 times before you actually get to talk to somebody. And so I'm trying to make the festival without any schedule so that we could actually have 3 days every year that we could have time for each other and sit around and visit more so than the music. Mm-hmm. And not having that schedule, like even the start time on Friday or the end time on Monday, I just want it to work for everybody. And if you just got a one night, or if you're busy Friday and Saturday, you can still come Sunday. There is no schedule. Show up and there'll be people sitting around, and you can bring your camp chair around and find community and sit and visit. And you know, the sponsored circles, Whitewall will have one, the Sioux River Folk Festival and the Full Circle Book Co-op are doing some poetry and some book writing stuff and some really interesting stuff in their circle. But the circles that I've got set up as sponsored camps are basically, the only rules is one song at a time clockwise, because then everybody gets an opportunity to play their song. And again, part of this is me boiling things down and trying to I guess, with playing one song at a time clockwise, what happens in a lot of festivals is people start a jam. And if you're a singer-songwriter, you really don't fit in that jam. And it's not conducive to be inviting you in and making it all inclusive. Mm-hmm. And that's just the culture in different places. But in Texas, I learned that value of being quiet while someone else is playing and listening to the words and being able to hear the song itself rather than trying to figure out how to play with, and then you're disconnected and you didn't hear the song because you're trying to figure out how to play with it.
Yeah.
So not that anything is right or wrong in this. I'm just trying to bring things down to a relationship and community. And so these words, like getting rid of main stage, backstage, green room, musicians, hospitality, it's not that I don't have any one of them, but as soon as you take that away, for me anyways, it seems to eliminate a lot of ego. There's nowhere to hide, you know, and I had a lot of disconnect with talking to every variation of this as far as even musicians talking to them on the phone because you just can't connect on a text or a message. It just don't work. Everybody has a different barometer of the same sentence like we were talking about earlier. And so I want a place that's comfortable enough that my heart is drawing out the closet musicians, you know. All the people I've known for 50 years that have sold hundreds of acoustics in this town of Sioux Falls for the 50 years I've been alive, and versus the people that are playing out, there's a huge distance in between.
There are a lot of guitars out there in farmhouses and small towns and,
yeah, and when you're
apartment
on a farm,
buildings in the city, bring them out.
Yeah, when you grow up in rural areas, you know, you're raised to get up when the sun comes up and work till dark, and your hobbies kind of take second, you know, so that you can get your work done. And that's all great and positive too. But pointing out that, you know, there is a time and a place for everything, and there's a lot of musicians that I just like to draw out of the woodwork that I don't even know are here.
Well, those musicians are invited. MontroseMusicFestival.org is where you can find more. Red Volkart is going to play. He's from Merle Haggard's band. He's going to play Saturday night with a country and western dance show. Saturday night, Sunday, Friday. We'll put all this information up on our website. Matt Faulkner, thank you for playing for us today. Thanks for the conversation as well.
Absolutely.
Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Laurie.
Thank you for listening.